Yeah, well, drugs and money has been the focus of the Australian Crime Commission's report released a little over a week ago now, and how it's impacted on the NRL. We're going to talk about it on our opening show for this year. Probably not the way we wanted to do the opening show of the year of NRL Live. Yes, it is NRL Live, and with me, as always, is St. Peter. Thanks for coming back all new year 2013.
Absolute pleasure to be back, Paulie G. How are you?
Well, doing pretty well. Obviously, this is a very special edition of the show, NRL Live. No Tigers MS with us tonight, unfortunately, but Pete, you and I are going to talk about this very serious issues of match fixing, crime in organised crime within the sport in general, Australian sport and international sport for that matter, but specifically we're going to look at NRL and, of course, also the drugs and that side of things, which has been getting most of the exposure, let's face it, from the media, the mainstream media, in this whole outcome of the commission's report. But we want to look also at the match fixing and that side of things, because that's something that hasn't really been discussed as much. And Pete, you have some very late-breaking news just out, so do you want to let us know about that, about match fixing in Europe?
Absolutely. As this report in Australia the other day mentioned, the match fixing appears to be in more than just one sport. It's not just rugby league. Certainly, it's right across the whole range of sports. And a story just hot off the presses only an hour ago is reported by the BBC. As a football match-fixing suspect arrested in Italy, an international football match-fixing suspect has been arrested after arriving from Singapore and giving himself up, according to Italian police. And the Italian media have named the suspect. He's from Slovenia, and his name is Admir Sulic, or Sulic.
So there we go. So the first name suspect there from Europe. So that's very interesting. Now, of course, we usually do the show on a Tuesday night, but we're doing this one on a Thursday night. So obviously you download via www.paulygsports.com or via the iTunes podcast. And you may be listening days in advance, so maybe it's not so late breaking. So I'm sure you'll hear more about it after you've, or as you've listened to it. But very big news there for us in regards to the wider allegations of match fixing across the sporting arena. But Pete, specific to NRL, there is one case, apparently, a Sydney game that's being investigated, although we don't know anything more specific than that at this point. But obviously over the years, I think you've been telling me before we went on the show that, look, these sort of allegations honestly have been going since the game began, pretty much.
Absolutely, Paul. If you go back to the halcyon days of the Dragons back in the 1960s, mm-hmm. with their eighth premiership win in a row, it was 1963.
Yeah.
During that year, they'd been beaten three times by the so-called millionaires of the comp in those days, the Western Suburbs Magpies,
yeah.
ably led by Arthur Summons, the little bloke on our now famous trophy.
That's right.
And, yes, he led by Arthur Summons that day, and there was talk around that there was massive money had gone on St. George just before the match. The match was a very, very close match, played in appalling conditions, as we know now from the trophy. And there was a tackle on the famous St. George winger, Johnny King. He was one of the famous try scorers in grand final history in Australia. He was tackled, and allegedly the referee said, "Let him up, let him up." The West Tigers, West Magpies, I should say, players thought that how soon we forget. The West Magpies players thought that the tackle was complete and the King was going to play the ball. In fact, the referee let him up and run again and score. And this turned out to be the very decisive play in the match. And there was a lot of upset, a lot of angst from West Magpies supporters, general media at the time, and particularly the players, of course. So this certainly is not a brand new thing for rugby league, and certainly not a brand new thing for world sport.
No, and back in 1909, the Balmain Tigers, of course, ended up forfeiting the grand final. They thought that South Sydney had agreed with them not to turn up to play the match as a curtain raiser to the Wallabies-Kangaroos game. But I guess Souths had different ideas and they kicked off and won the game. So maybe not quite match-fixing in the regards to do with gambling, but certainly match-fixing in regards to getting the result that they desired. So we have seen that all the way back from the beginnings of this code, but very serious right now. And Pete, we were talking about that it could actually be more of effect on the younger players on that tier 2, tier 3 level, because they don't really get paid a lot of money, if any, and that could have more influence for them to perhaps fix a match.
Well, this is it. The first grade rugby league competition in this country, particularly the signing of this new $1 billion deal late last year, which we've discussed,
TV contract. That occurred.
A lot of the first grade players now are getting an awful lot of money, but a lot of it's still to flow through to the under 20s type players. If you imagine you're a under 20s player with a random club, your game is 11th versus 12th in the second last round of the year, and you come on and you're paid to, someone says to you, listen, if you come on and you're behind and you throw an intercept pass to the other team for them to score, and I'll give you $100,000 for doing it.
Yeah.
And the week before, your chief executive has said, listen, we haven't got room for you next year. We don't think you've got the talent. This player is then left in a bit of a quandary. Sure, it's very dishonest, and none of us who love our sport, whether it be rugby league, cricket, or whatever it may be, want to see that. But I think the younger guys who are on the list of money are certainly much more corruptible. The other point is, of course, with the match fixing, is that it's not just based on the actual total result of the game, as was illustrated with the Ryan Tandy incident. There is betting a multitude of ways that you can bet on a rugby league game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It doesn't have to affect the result itself. And then we saw that in cricket with the no balls, and obviously those Pakistan players are now in jail. But you could see how easily that influence could come into it when you're not actually losing the game for yourself or your team.
Absolutely. And see, with the Ryan Tandy incident giving away the penalty in front of the post to give the Cowboys the shot at goal for that opening play.
Hmm.
And what happened is that Mr. Tandy gave away a penalty on halfway to the Cowboys and gave another one away in front of the post because he'd been in on it to have the Cowboys be the first scoring play and the first scoring play to be a goal. As the gods would have it, the fair gods of the world, Cowboys actually didn't take the shot at goal and went for the try and scored the try.
And he was actually done 2-year conviction now. He did appeal it, but the appeal was rejected. So whether he goes to the Supreme Court or not, we're not sure. But Ryan Tandy, there's a case for you, fairly recent, really.
But in the cricket sense, certainly it has been shown that the young pace bowler, Mohammad Amir, as you said, deliberately bowled the no balls, was basically coerced by his much wealthier and much more powerful captain.
Mm.
And young Amir had a very, very poor upbringing in Pakistan. So what I'm saying is a much more corruptible position, if you like, a much more vulnerable position as well.
Well, let's read some of that report out now from the Crime Commission. And it talks specifically about the role of organised crime. And it says about organised crime groups taking advantage of the current legislative and regulatory situation whereby persons and entities who supply certain substances to athletes which are prohibited under their WADA code do not commit a crime in Australian jurisdictions. Now, it also suggests professional sport in Australia is highly vulnerable to organised criminal infiltration through legitimate business relationships with sport franchises and other associations. This is facilitated by a lack of appropriate levels of due diligence by sporting clubs and sports governing bodies when entering into business arrangements. There is also increasing evidence of personal relationships of concern between professional athletes and organised criminal identities and groups. So, I mean, this is suggesting even the bigger name players could have relationships with perhaps people that may not be considered particularly desirable. And obviously those sort of influences of sort of maybe factions of society and that sort of thing could be you know, maybe considered glamorous or you know, interesting to especially young, impressionable rugby league players, for example.
Absolutely. Well, some of these people who, there was one whose family's actually featured on Underbelly, has been involved with the Sydney Rugby League Club. So certainly there's some elements of society that, and it's inevitable the elements are going to mix.
Well, also they did mention, of course, we talked about the younger players, so it did actually mention that second tier and third tier, and I'll just read this now. Sub-elite athletes, apart from the use of peptides by elite athletes, and this is talking about more of the drugs side of things, it's talking about peptides and exactly how they affect with both elite athletes and sub-elite athletes. And this is peptide and hormone consumers, and there could also be occurred during race horsing, which would be a breach of rules of racing, it suggests. But in regards to the sub-elite athletes, it says that they've been identified as using peptides and hormones. Sub-elite athletes are considered a high-risk group for doping due to the highly competitive environment in attaining a position in elite sport and the ability to make significant gains in strength and power through the use of PIEDs. So you can see there that the report has specifically mentioned that sort of the tier below athletes, what they've termed sub-elite athletes as already. I think they mention a rugby union team where one fellow had ordered some, it says here, 10 5-milligram vials of white powder labelled GHRP-6, and it was intercepted by the Customs and Border Protection on the 14th of October 2010. And on the 28th of November 2010, Customs and Border Protection intercepted another package, also from Canada, addressed to a different individual on the same team, containing 5 vials of what is believed to be GHRP-6. So it's possible that the whole team was involved. There was a 4-year ban on one individual for possession and attempted trafficking of GHRP-6, and another individual received a 2-year ban for possession of GHRP-6 from the Australian Rugby Union, the ARU. So they do have one example there, specific example, but obviously the report in general, Pete, moving on about it, because one of the criticisms of the report was that it was considered to be rather vague. It didn't mention specific names or incidences, and that perhaps it even was a storm in a teacup, some people were saying, although now we are seeing more things coming out to perhaps suggest that isn't the case. Criticisms of the actual of the report and maybe the timing of it.
Absolutely. Well, we need to have some of these clubs properly named and some of these players properly named. Like, I don't see the point in, you know, like if you imagine in your workplace, you've got a couple of thousand people involved in your organisation, and someone comes out and says, oh, the place is corrupt and widespread corrupt, and if you've done nothing wrong, how would you feel as an official or player in a sport in Australia at the moment? You know, it's like people looking down on you because they think that you're a cheat because of this report. And the sooner they release some detail, make some arrests, whatever they're going to do, the better, because it's just pure speculation at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting because you would think that sort of, if it's as widespread as it's saying, maybe the people would be aware, like, oh, well, I thought that guy. And you do, I think Brian Smith came out and mentioned about one player he saw that when he was coaching Parramatta, and saying how one year he'd gone from being a pretty average player, a reserve grade standard player, to absolutely killing it in first grade. And he wanted all his players, like, how come that guy could do it? Well, that person allegedly was Rodney Howe, who got done for using steroids not long after that. So maybe that was the how.
I was going to say, there's been a few players that played under Brian Smith and then been killing it at other clubs in a couple of years later. But, there may be a little bit to that story. I hadn't heard Rodney Howe's name mentioned, but yes, I know he was caught. It was when there was the problem up at Newcastle, of course.
Yeah, I think that Brian Smith himself didn't name Howe specifically, but it's been alleged that perhaps that was the connotation he was making. Howe was found guilty of using steroids, was banned for a year there. And, I mean, look, especially for a player that perhaps is looking mainly at reserve grade. I mean, we saw it with the one of the Western Australian fast bowlers not too long ago. He came up basically from second grade and suddenly made his way into Western Australian cricket in a pretty short space of time, and then was done for steroid use and rubbed out for 2 years. So there's a player that might have been simply looking for a bit of an advantage on weekend cricket, and suddenly he's thrust in, you know, that the benefit of the, a fast bowler using sort of the legal substances suddenly had thrusted him well beyond his what he ever could have imagined that it would have come out of it. I mean, there's people that, I mean, steroids in itself, not all steroids are illegal. They're not good for you. You hear the side effects, you know, what you hear, people that have used them and say, look, don't ever use it, because it does awful things to your body that you would never want to happen. But, I mean,
well, these players are taking a massive risk.
Yeah, well, there are people out there that aren't professional athletes that are taking them. They're taking them to look good, to, you know, to impress at the gym. I mean, there's plenty of bodybuilders. So how many of those people also play sort of fun sport, you know, medium level of competitive sport? I mean, there's no testing. There's no testing at that level, and that's one of the things the report mentions. Well, specifically in regards to the NRL, six clubs were named, Pete, and obviously no evidence has come out against any of these six clubs at this point, except perhaps for their involvement with the recently departed Essendon Bombers sports scientist, I suppose you would say. I'm not quite sure what his official role was there, Stephen Dank. But the six clubs involved, they've been pretty vehement in defending the accusations against them. And we can't really see anything specific that's come out against any of them at this point.
Well, Penrith ran second last year, so I guess you could say that was their defence.
They actually invited, Phil Gould invited every member of their organisation down to the meeting with ASADA a couple of days back, so they wanted to make sure everyone was across board with the fact that, you know, there really wasn't apparently a lot of evidence, or any evidence really, against Penrith or any of the current players. So they're trying to keep
everything. What was the club name? So this is the point. How can you come out and name a club, and then we hear that there's very little evidence? Like, it just doesn't marry up for me.
I'm not sure where it came from, whether the club was named, whether it was named by the NRL, by the media, by, you know, ASADA. This is some of the grey areas that we haven't heard too much about. We do know that there is a Sydney game where they're going to investigate with the match fixing. That could waylay to interesting things. We've seen in the A-League an unusually large amount of money put on in Hong Kong for an A-League match just recently. Obviously, in Europe, as you mentioned at the head of the show, we have seen, you know, now arrests in regards to match fixing, and a widespread match fixing in professional football, as they call it, or soccer, as we call it. So I guess that the match fixing side of things is going to be something we're going to have to keep an eye out. What else do you think could come out in the future?
Well, I just want to talk about one of the effects on it. It's been reported today that Cronulla, who that had a pretty good season last year under Shane Flanagan, made the eight, ended up going out
certainly
the first
overachieved.
Week. But they don't have a sponsor for this year as yet, and part of the reason they're blaming for that is the fact that they're actually named in this report as one of those six clubs.
Yeah,
and
look, that
Flanagan,
has
the coach, has come out and said, we are as clean as we can be, and so it has an
come
effect
out
on the game that
they also
you don't want to see. I don't want to see innocent people or clubs affected, even the Sharks.
They also didn't have a sponsor at the start of last year, so
that is a good point. That is a good point.
But, you've got a question
coming
exactly.
Off a very good season.
It has come out in the media that it's being blamed for it, but I don't know. Does two and two make four in this case? You know, again, it's the same with the allegations against people. We don't want to unfairly allege against Cronulla. We also don't want to allege necessarily that this is the reason, allege against the ACCC for the report, that this is going to be specifically the reason that's costing
You can't see a chain of pharmacies sponsoring them, though, can you?
Very good, very good. Well, Pete, I tell you, we're going to have to keep an eye on this for the rest of, obviously, this season. It is putting a bit of a dampener on the season. We're really looking forward to the new year and have been, obviously, before this, but even so, in a real live back each week. You can find it at www.pullygsports.com or simply subscribe. Pete, the big question that last year's listeners want to know, have you got a Twitter handle yet?
The answer is no, not yet.
Well, you can find me at Paulie G Sports, and of course you can find Tigers MS at TigersMS78 on the Twitter. Make sure you do follow both of us, and more information comes out specifically about the drugs and the match fixing in sport. We will get it to you as quickly as possible. As soon as this broke, we had links up on our website, Twitter, coming out, and so yeah, we're really keeping you up to date as best as we can in regards to that. And next week we've got a bumper preview show for the new season, where Pete, we're going to do our predictions for the year at top eight, our winner. Now you and I both got it right last year, so this is one you have to listen to, because we're batting 100 on our average right now.
Absolutely. No, looking forward to the season. The unofficial kickoff for me tomorrow night with a Charity Shield match should be great.
Charity Shield on tomorrow. Foundation Cup also this weekend. No Sonny Bill Williams, unfortunately, but the West Tigers have got Braith and Nass, the Roosters' ex-captain, coming up against his former club in that. So there should be two great games this weekend, and we will be back next week to give all that information. And you know what else comes back next week, Pete?
What would that be, mate? World of Sport?
World of Sport, you got it. So the very regular listeners to this show will be very much looking forward to your opening World of Sport, and we'll be following. I wonder exactly how Mr. Adam Holyoak is doing.
Yeah, I wonder too, actually. I haven't heard much about him, but I'll see what I can find, hey?
Well, you might have to save it for later on in the year, but I'm sure there's been plenty of stuff happening over the course of our summer months in regards to the world, the weird and the wonderful world of sport. Pete, thanks for coming in on short notice on this very special edition of NRL Live.
Absolute pleasure, mate. Let's hope the news for sport in general gets better, eh?
I agree 100%, but by the same token, I also want to make sure that everything is cleared up, everything is clean, and if there are people out there that aren't abiding by the laws of sport or the laws of their country, that they do get found out and weeded out of this great game of ours.
Absolutely.
Mate, thanks again, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, mate. See you then.